Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
Today on the show, we're talking about STEM subjects. STEM or STEAM, we will discuss that too. But learn more on the show today. We have a whole panel of experts talking about science. We'll be joined by CERN's Head of Teacher and Student Programs, Sascha Schmilling. He'll be explaining a bit about the resources and the facilities that are available at CERN at the moment, and also some of the facilities that are coming in 2023 with the new Science Gateway. At the moment, it's a big construction site, but there are lots more facilities coming. We'll look at what they've got now too. Also, I will speak to primary school teacher Christy McAvoy, who is very passionate about science in the classroom, talking about a lot of the soft skills that we get from science. And then Hedwig Enns will join me from Frontiers Science for Young Minds. Now, she's going to be talking about the peer review process for any budding scientists out there that are fascinated by science. Well, there are some scientists that could use your help in knowing whether their papers that they would like to get published are suitable for kids. They want you to read them, review them, and ask them any questions that come up. Hedwig will be explaining that whole process that the kids that she works with go through in order for scientists to get published in the science journal that she works for. And also, we'll be talking to Felicia De Lucia from the International Institute of Lancy all about their incredible STEAM labs. And that's where we'll be talking about STEM versus STEAM. They have added in a little A, and it stands for the arts. So how can we integrate the arts in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, the STEM subjects? All of this to come today on Learn More, our show all about education.
Learn More, sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
Sascha Schmilling is the Head of Teacher and Student Programs at CERN. Today we're talking about the importance of STEM subjects and also how we engage children in these subjects and channel a love for science and engineering. Now, the WRS studio is just up the road from CERN. In fact, the Large Hadron Collider is probably deep down somewhere underneath my feet as I'm talking now. But today I'm hoping that Sascha can tell us about their educational facilities and resources, both that are available now and also that will be coming in the future with the brand new Science Gateway construction that's due to open in 2023. So, Sascha, what can you recommend to parents and teachers who are listening now who would like to know more about the facilities that you have available at CERN?
Yeah, CERN has a very large outreach and education program, especially also for school kids ages mainly 12 years and above currently. But with the new Science Gateway that we are currently building, and those of you who pass by the CERN site on the road, the Merin Road, from time to time you see a large construction site, and there we're just building a new science center. And this science center will house a lot of exhibitions, some labs for hands-on experiments, and also an auditorium where we will have science shows. And in the framework of this new science center, we are going to enlarge also the age range we are catering for. As our DG said at the presentation of the Science Center, we aim for 5 to 105 years of age to have programs for. And this is an extension to our current programs, which are mainly secondary schools when we come to the pure education programs. Of course, we have already quite some outreach programs with visits to the CERN sites, with programs that explain what we are doing, the Women in Technology Day that we always participate in, and lots of possibilities for internships, especially in the local area.
I imagine that lots of the local schools have done day trips to CERN at some point, but am I right in saying that people come from all over the world to do the school programs?
When we look at purely visits to CERN, I would say the local schools don't do day trips. They rather come several times for a certain program and then go back to their classes, explain it, and then come back to CERN for another input to that. while the schools and other visitors, and we are talking something like 100,000, 120,000 a year, they come from all over the world. And as far as I remember, about 60% of the visitors in our official visits program are school kids.
And also you're teaching the teachers.
We have teacher programs for teachers from all over the world with a focus on CERN's member states, which are 23 European states. And there we welcome about 1,000 teachers every year in programs, in international but also in national language programs, because it's quite important that the teachers get the knowledge that they can gain here at CERN also in a language they can use then to convey it to their students. So we started off in 1998 with teacher programs with 5 participants at the time. Mm-hmm. And we are now at about 1,000 a year. And I don't exactly recall the number, but it's 25 plus languages that we did programs in already.
So talking about this new science gateway, currently a construction site, what is actually being built? I know that there's an auditorium in there.
Yeah, essentially the auditorium is something which is not purely for education, of course. It's also used for scientific conferences and the like. The educational way we'll use the auditorium is that we are going to have science shows there, educational science shows, where we try to convey concepts for those who want to understand physics. On the other hand, in the hands-on part, which is 2 education labs, actually we already have an education lab here with more than 6,000 high school students going through. This we will double in capacity. And we will have then, as I said, also programs starting from 5 years old. So the idea for this science center in the more closer education part is that we have 6 days a week openings. So we expect that Tuesday to Friday, that's mainly school classes who come on request, while for the weekends, we expect rather walk-in people coming with their families, with curious children or curious adults. And the idea is to get the other part motivated and curious about what we are doing here, what STEM is about, because STEM is the way that we think is a very good way for society also to look at things, to have a scientific view on things. And CERN is a physics laboratory, of course, but we really need all the STEM ingredients. So it's scientists, it's a lot of technology, a lot of engineering, and mathematics can't hurt at all in any place.
The new Science Gateway is due to open in 2023. Stay tuned. Sascha Schmilling is the head of teacher and student programs at CERN. Thank you so much for joining me, Sascha, and telling me about what we can discover at CERN. Thank you.
Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
It's Learn More, today talking about science and education. Christy McAvoy is a primary school teacher, so he's speaking mainly about kids between the ages of 5 and 11. My first question to you, Christy, is when you teach science, how do you go about it? What motivates kids to get involved in science subjects?
I think why teach science is a good place to start, because basically, children, especially primary school children, they're so curious. They want to know everything about everything. So to be able to teach in a way that fuels that curiosity is beautiful. And science does that, because science is all about asking questions and finding answers. Another really important reason to teach science is because of the soft skills that it fosters. And this is what kids need. They need to know research skills. They need to know thinking skills. So everything from formulating those questions, planning out something, observing, collecting, recording, organizing data, interpreting it, finding, presenting what you found out. These are skills that permeate so much more than just science. And the same for the thinking skills, comprehending the analysis side of things, the application of the knowledge. These are lifelong skills that the kids can use. So you asked me about motivation. And the main thing I find with children in primary is that they are so motivated by experiments. They would rather just do a bunch of experiments and not really think about them and just watch things explode and change color and gases be released. But of course, our job is to get them to actually learn something from that cool experience. So experiments are a very good way to motivate them.
So we're talking make fun things explode, pretty colours and loud bangs. It tends to be quite a good way to attract people. What about things like field trips?
I do some forest school stuff with my students. And so to be able to go into the forest and to do some kind of a tracking of, you know, finding out which bugs are living in the area or taking samples of local water sources and stuff like that can be really interesting to them. There's of course field trips to science museums and things like that, which are really set up for the children to do experiments. But children are always motivated to leave a classroom, let's be honest. so we can definitely harness that for their scientific knowledge.
I want to talk more about those soft skills that the kids are all working on as you're doing those scientific experiments. I mean, what's happening for you as a teacher whilst you're doing all of this? Are you aware of every child and every soft skill and who's learning what quicker than another or who might need extra support? And how do you juggle all of that in the background with so many children at one time?
So I think what's really important is there are so many aspects of what they can be learning through an experiment. And as a teacher, if you try to focus on all of them, it will be so tedious for the children. So basically what you need to do is think as a group or as an individual, what area should we work on in this particular experiment? So for example, if we're going to do an experiment where we'll use a real world thing that's happening, right? So we have COVID, we tell them to wash their hands all the time. We can do an experiment where they put their hands on an agar plate or even on a piece of bread, and we watch the fungus and the bacteria and everything grow. So they can actually see what is living on their hands and why they should wash their hands. So
yeah.
I might say, for example, what I'm really noticing is that this particular group or this particular person is very weak in the recording of their data. So then I might give that person or group a template and say, well, this is the way we're going to organize our data this time. So then it gives them that tool for the future. And then the next time I can say, okay, use that tool that you used before. And now this time I'm going to teach you how do you organize your results. So if I try and make a focus of every single part of the experiment will take 10 years and the thing that they enjoy doing will take 10 seconds and it'll be so tedious and boring for them. So it is about saying in this particular experiment, this is going to be our focus because this is where I know you need the support.
As a primary school teacher, you teach a variety of different subjects. Do you find that science sort of bleeds into everything that you do?
Basically, there are some things which are what we call standalone, where this is just science for science sake, but we teach units of inquiry instead. So I might think, how can science permeate this particular thing that we're looking into? So we might be looking into how communities organize themselves, for example. Mm. And then I might say, oh, well, let's look at this particular community that learned how to harness energy to make electricity. We can look in the past, right? And we can say, well, how did they turn an idea into the reality of being able to flick on a light switch, which is incredible. So we can, through a larger lens of what's happening in our learning, we can then zero in on a scientific aspect of it, rather than science just being this thing that's not connected. Because of course, science is connected to everything.
Are all kids curious?
Yes. Yes.
Just straight away,
we
yes.
Have, I believe that some education, quite a lot of education out there, does a really good job of trying to squish the curiosity out of kids. And I think that uncurious adults are the result of that. But every single child is curious about the world, and most adults are too.
Christy McAvoy, primary school teacher, thank you so much for talking to me about curious kids and the benefits of science in primary school, including all those soft skills. Thank you for talking to me today.
Thanks, Kat. All the best. Bye-bye.
Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
Hedwig Enns works for a journal called Frontiers for Young Minds. This is a publication about science for young people. It's all free, by the way, but Frontiers for Young Minds don't just write articles for kids and hope that they'll understand it. They test that. For academics out there, you'll be aware of the peer review process that goes into being published. But here's something pretty amazing for all those budding scientists aged between 8 and 15 years old. Hedwig, let's start with the peer review process. Hedwig, can you explain this peer review process?
So to answer that question, I'm going to go actually one step back and ask, what actually do scientists do? So every day, scientists all over the world are asking questions and running experiments in either labs or jungles or glaciers or even outer space. And they run these experiments to gather data to try to answer these questions. Now, once they've gathered their data and they thought about how to interpret the data, they want to share that with other scientists. And one way of sharing their results is by writing a scientific article. Now, it's very important for scientists that they actually explain everything in a very clear and correct way in the article, because other researchers use those kind of articles to then ask the next set of questions. So to make sure that scientists actually write articles that are clear and correct, they send their articles to other scientists for feedback. And they're asking, did I write it correctly? Do you understand what I'm saying? Did I interpret the results correctly? And this, the feedback of other scientists, what we call peer review. So basically, scientists give other scientists feedback if their articles are written in a clear and concise way. And this peer review is very important, because imagine what would happen if a scientist wrote about a new discovery in a way that's either incorrect or unclear. Because like I said, other scientists or doctors or people like you and me, when we read the article, we make decisions based on that information in that article. So you really want that information in that article to be clear, correct, and concise.
You work in a youth program, though. So why are we asking kids and teens aged between 8 and 15 years old to participate in this?
Well, that is because our journal, Frontiers for Young Minds, we want to make science open and accessible for everyone and also empower the next generation of scientists. And we believe that the best way to make scientific discoveries available to younger audience is actually to involve that younger audience in the process. I mean, if you want your article to be read by a young audience, by a kid of 10-year-old, then who's actually the best judge whether that article is actually suited for you? Well, you, the audience.
What do you think that kids and teens are looking for in publications in particular? What do you think that they'll spot in an article that maybe you or I would not?
So I would say they're actually looking for a story. And I think they're looking for a story in which they feel addressed as equals, where the scientific information is not toned or dumbed down, so to say. So yeah. I think they're looking for a story in which they feel the scientists are actually trying to share a story and information with them, and not either just dump that information on them or go the other way and say, oh, we're not going to explain this part because that's too difficult for you. So I think they're looking for a story that the kids and teens, they understand the story, but also they're challenged when reading it.
What do you think that kids get out of it, out of doing this, this reading, this peer review?
So if they're involved in the peer review process, I would say they are getting empowerment out of it in different ways. First of all, they're getting empowerment because they are asking questions. And this may be a weird thing to say, because when I joined the journal, I was like, oh, but kids always ask questions. They don't need to be empowered to ask questions. And over the years, I learned actually I do, because as a young kid, you ask questions. But a lot of times, I mean, I don't know if you have it, but I, as an adult, oftentimes I don't dare to ask questions anymore because I think, oh, I'm in my mid-30s. I should know this answer by now. So we try to empower kids saying, no, please ask any question you have. And with that, actually, also, we tell them someone will listen to your questions. These scientists, they can only publish if they actually have answered your questions, because they need your stamp of approval to publish their article. So they're being empowered that actually their voice matters, their feedback matters, what they say to the scientist or how they give suggestions to improve the article, the scientist will listen to it. And the last kind of empowerment is that maybe they're empowered that they can be scientists as well. And I think those are very important kinds of empowerment that we really need the next generation of kids and scientists to have.
For all of those young scientists out there now, the kids, the teens, even parents listening, if they would like to know more, is there a link to the publication that we can give out today?
So you can link to the website, which is called kids.frontiersin.org. And then you will see on the right-hand side, you'll see a big button that says participate. And then you can read about all the different roles and how you can participate in our journal. And everything is free. So the scientists are not paying to get published. The young reviewers do this work for free. And everyone can read the online articles for free. Because we believe science should be for everyone and open for everyone.
And that website that you've given as well, that's where the actual journal is published and you can read the articles.
And you can also look for the articles. Like if you want to read about how COVID, what it actually was, you just type in COVID and you will get the peer-reviewed by kids articles about COVID. You understand what this virus is. Or if you want to learn about rainfall or volcanoes, just type that word in and you will find all our scientific articles about that.
What a great resource and what a great opportunity for kids that are interested in science. Yes. Hedwig, thanks so much for telling us about it. Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy. An education for life at IIL.
Talking STEM subjects today and how best to encourage them, what they can offer to kids on Learn More. But is it STEM or STEAM? We spoke to Felicia De Lucia, who is the Curriculum Teaching and Learning Coordinator for the Early Years and English Primary section at the International Institut du Lancy. She coordinates the STEAM programmes for the early years and primary setting. So they work really hard at IIL to integrate STEAM subjects into education as early as 3 years old. Here's Felicia.
So here at the Institut International de Lancy, we've made exciting developments to expand our STEAM labs and also adapt these working spaces for our youngest learners. We wanted to be able to build an environment to where children from the earliest of ages, around 3 years old in our early years and primary program, would have a setup to be involved in maker spaces, basically workshops where the learners would be encouraged to pursue their ideas in building and creating with woodwork or other types of materials for upcycling to be kind of a more ecological and eco-friendly school environment within the aspects of STEAM. We wanted to ensure that our youngest learners were involved in using a wide range of tools and equipment, along with technology, to enrich their learning and to help them pursue their creativity and collaboration skills.
I noticed that you say STEAM instead of STEM. You've thrown an A in there. Tell us a little bit more about what that A stands for and why you have grouped it in with other STEM subjects.
Okay, so basically we all know that STEM, it's a very common anagram for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. But when we look at STEM, it's mostly driven by an innovation aspect of technology itself. That's what's driving the concept in education. But here at the Institut International de Lancy, we're guided to provide a curriculum for our youngest students to, at this young level, become very well-rounded and explore their talents individually and prepare them to meet the challenges for an ever-changing world. That's why we say STEAM, which incorporates the arts into the STEM education. When you incorporate the arts into STEM, it leads students to obtaining skills such as teamwork, cooperation, their creativity, and ability to adapt and change. And those are just to name a few, because you want students to start from a very young age to become more versatile and open to opportunities, helping them to aspire into other fields that could be within science, technology, engineering, mathematics, the STEM qualities for the future. But we know that with the evolving aspects of today's workforce, we start really early to prepare them for a future in which the roles of STEM have changed and calling for more of a well-rounded professional background where they're able to adapt, able to collaborate, able to have leadership skills and think outside the box. So obviously at the Institute International de Lancey, we want to start preparing students for an education for life.
In terms of a very practical example, what is the one thing on the curriculum that you think of when you think, oh, the kids are going to really love doing that? What do you look forward to doing with the kids because they're enthusiastic about it?
Oh, STEAM. Everybody comes into the STEAM lab. Yes, today we're doing STEAM. We have the opportunities where children can come in into the maker spaces, do the workshops and woodwork, being able to do uplifting recycling. Recycling projects and be able their own creating creators type of spaces. We have these engineering challenge rooms that are dedicated just for areas for students to explore, be able to build and find solutions. We also, along with STEAM, the technology side, you've got your coding, robotics, being able to incorporate and intentionally combine those subject areas of science and mathematics and technology to be able to incorporate a construction aspect. So kids are either using kits with Legos or scrap materials to be able to identify and micro bits that they could program these, what we would say, junk materials to upcycle them to become something that's really animated and to explore into furthering into their coding skills. We also offer science fair opportunities where children can deliberate events and showcase their learning along with the technology and investigations that we offer in STEAM. So it's a very exciting environment.
Felicia De Lucia talking about getting kids as young as 3 involved in those STEAM subjects and the dedicated STEAM lab at IIL. Thanks, Felicia, for joining us.
Learn more. Sponsored by the Institut International de Lancy, an education for life at IIL.